So we are joined today by Carla Molinaro. She is fresh back in the UK from the HOKA Project Carbon 2, I believe, 100K attempt. Carla, how was it?
It was good. It was weird to do a race again, but awesome at the same time. Yeah.
So many months of not thinking that. But a pretty amazing event. What a crazy aim and achievement that HOKA put out there to try and break that 100K, that mythical 100K record, which is obviously been for a couple of years now in the men's bit, and obviously quite a while in the women's. How was it out there in the desert racing?
Yeah, it was awesome. Like they'd done one of these events a couple of years ago, and I think they learned quite a lot from the first one. So, yeah, this one was, the course was like flat and fast, and, yeah, we were super lucky with the weather. Like it was a bit windy, but apart from that, it was cool. Which was a bit mental because like a couple of days before it was like high 20s and then the day after the race it was like hammering it down with sideways wind. So, yeah,
you got a little lucky.
Yeah, they prayed to the weather gods.
No, that's good. It was a live feed. People could tune in and watch it. I jumped on a few times throughout the day and then kind of stayed in for the last 20K of gyms and then jumped in for the end of the female race as well, which you were involved in. They looked like they did a really good job at picking a nice course. It was flat. You've actually popped yours on Strava, which is pretty cool to see all of the data. Elevation gain, 515 feet. So over 62 miles, that is as flat as you can probably ask for. But that's amazing. Obviously, you went out pretty hot. You were aiming to break, the 7-hour mark? So you went out pretty hot. You were looking amazing for quite a lot of the race, to be fair. You were leading the female division for quite a lot of it as well. How did it feel? What was the game plan in going into it then?
Yeah, so I wanted to go hard. Like I wanted to see if I could break 7 hours, and I knew like it was going to go one or two ways. It was either going to work or it wasn't. But from the racing and stuff I've done before, like I knew I could have gone in like conservatively and like cruised it round, but I kind of saw it as an opportunity to like just go and smash it. Like you don't get that many chances to go and race 100K. So to have like, we had pacemakers to have that course. I was like, well, this is like the best shot I'm going to get at it. So I just went for it. And yeah, it was working like really well until about 40K, my quad started to seize up. And it was pretty much like that just got like progressively worse as the race went on. And it stopped me from like fully like extending my leg and getting the full range to my leg. And that's just what slowed me down, which was a bit irritating because like physically I was fine. Like I wasn't tired. I wasn't out of breath. Like my energy levels, like my nutrition, all that like went perfectly. It was just my stupid quad that stopped me running. But, you know, it happens.
That damn leg.
Yeah. You know, I'm glad that I tried and I went hard because I now know I can race at that pace for like I was at that pace for like 50, 65K. So, and then I started to slow and I'm like, if I can do it for that long, I can do it for 100 if I can get my legs to work. So that's a good takeaway.
But you bring up something that that kind of distance, 100K, kind of brings out a few things. You don't know what could happen. Could it be nutrition? Could it be a stomach issue? Could it be a muscular issue? It just kind of exposes you over that kind of distance to a whole range of things. And like you say, without doing it or without giving yourself the chance to try and go for that goal of breaking 7, you'd never have known. You'd never know. Yeah. Maybe you go away, you'll do a bit of strength work on the knee or the quad, and then it'll be perfect next time. So it's a learning process, I guess.
Yeah, 100%. It's just a shame that there's not that many of them, so you can't be like, okay, cool, right, in like 3 months' time, I can do another one. It's like,
it again.
Yeah. But yeah, no, it's all about learning. And like if you can nail, like now that the like nutrition side and the training is nailed, it's like, okay, let's figure out what went wrong with my leg. So yeah, it's like a puzzle.
It's very true. But I guess one of the questions is, obviously Hoka put on the event. How was the shoe? How was it? It looked like it was performing pretty amazingly. Like Jim Walmsley was moving absolutely rapidly for it. Everybody, no one had an issue with it. But from yourself, how was it?
Yeah, I really like it. Like I didn't get like any issues with my feet at all. Like my feet at the end, like didn't even hurt, which is like bizarre because normally they would. But I find with this carbon shoe, like that's a really good thing with it, is that because of the carbon plate in it, it takes some of that like force that you're putting through your body. And it helps to like dissipate it a bit better. So you're not completely smashing your legs. So yeah, my feet were completely fine. I got one little blister underneath like one of my little toenails. I think that was just from my toe hitting the top, but yeah, apart from that, nothing. So I can't,
blister's not too bad after that. And the heat as well. It wasn't exactly too cool. It was fairly warm, especially there. So that's pretty amazing. Obviously taking part in the Project Carbon event, did you get a chance to kind of have a little look at the men's field? Have you rewatched any of it? Have you seen some highlights yet of anything?
Yeah, I've seen a few of the highlights, not much of it though. I do want to re-watch it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like the pace that Jim and Raj Paul like came past me was disgusting. Like they were like flying. They looked like gazelles. Oh. I was just like, really? Like both of them have got these like really long, skinny legs that just like bound past you in this like beautiful stride. So yeah, it was really cool seeing them pass me on the day and then going back and watching them finish because, it was amazing what they did.
No, definitely. And obviously over that kind of distance, especially you've mentioned Jim and Raj Paul, as it got deeper and deeper in, we just saw their running form. They held that all of the way. And yourself as well, you held a really good running form, obviously, until you get very deep into that 100K and then it kind of just survival mode kicks in. You just got to get it going. But obviously we mentioned a minute ago about strength, strengthening up the body. I've seen you're very pro strength and conditioning for runners. How did your strength and conditioning help your running form going into this kind of long distance event, especially on concrete as well? It's going to put a lot of pressure on you.
Yeah, I think that's like one thing. Like I did strength and conditioning and like a yoga session. So I do like yoga, but it's more like mobility balance for runners. And I did that like consistently every single week since October. And I think that massively helped. Like I definitely need, I think my quad is more to do with like, they're just rock solid. So I think I'd had a little issue with my lower back, which I'd been focusing on the physio. And the sports massage, and we hadn't done any work on my legs, so I think that was probably what the issue was. But the rest of the strength and conditioning work I did, I think, really helped going into this. It kind of kept all the little niggles away. You know, at the moment my quads are in bits, but the rest of my legs are fine, my glutes are fine. So I think that's probably a pretty good sign that all that side of it worked really well. And I think it's more like just being really consistent with those sessions, where I think a lot of us as like athletes, we like binge for a little bit and we'll smash out a few strength and conditioning sessions and then get bored.
Yeah.
Where I was just like doing it every week, just 30 minutes of each, probably prepared me pretty well for this race.
No, that's good. And alongside that, what was the running like? How much build up did you have until this event? When did you know?
So I knew in September, but I had just come off running the length of the UK and like a 6-week break. So I started my training at zero. So from there, it was quite nice because I could have like a really steady build up. I didn't have to like a few of the guys only found out about the race in December. So they had like a month to prepare where I had four. So yeah, nice steady build up. I think the longest run I did was about 62K, which was in mid-December. So yeah, that was pretty good. Pretty nice build up.
Cool. So a good build up and a few months to get yourself ready. So when in those months did you kind of start building a game plan? Was it at the beginning you were like, right, I'm going to go for sub-7, or was it as you were getting through the months, as you were feeling like the training working, did you think, I've got it in the legs, I can do this?
Yeah, it was. They had kind of mentioned at the beginning, we want to see if the women can go sub-7. So I was like, okay, I'll think about that. And then, so I'd planned my training, like my tempo runs, to focus on that time. And then as I started to go through the tempos and they started to get longer and I started to get fitter, I was like, yeah, okay, I was pretty confident at that point that I could do it because I was feeling good and feeling ready.
Yeah, and obviously the top woman got 7 hours and 40. What do you think would need to happen in terms of training aspect to achieve a sub-7? For a female athlete?
To be honest, I think the training that I did was pretty good. So like a couple of key sessions that I did was like really long tempo sessions. So things like 5x5K at quicker, like 20, 10 seconds, 20 seconds quicker than race pace. Yeah, it's a long rep.
That's a long rep.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, so I was doing that quite a bit. And then did another, so I probably started doing those sessions in November and would do that once a week. And then my long runs, I would do the long runs and have the last, 90 minutes or so as, a tempo run, again, running at race pace. But I'd make sure it was the end of the run at race pace when I was a little bit tired. So I think they were pretty key sessions. And I'd spoken to a few people that had done a sub, they were guys, but they had done sub-7 before. And that seemed to be the general consensus in what you needed to do in training to get there.
Mm-hmm. Well, there you go. Project Carbon 3.
Yeah.
Sub-7.
Yeah.
Hope to get on board. Get it done. No, that's good. An amazing achievement just to complete the 100K, obviously, with not many races last year. And great to obviously have – you were the only Brit as part of the group, men and female, I believe.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so that was cool.
Representing the UK, that's what we like. Need someone in there to get us up. So, obviously – aside from the Project Carbon event, which is kind of a standalone one-off thing, what is your general kind of race distance? Is it 100K? Is it a bit less? Is it 50K? What's the race distance for yourself, Carla?
Anything.
Or is it just...
So, yeah, the end of last year, I did an 8K cross country, which was horrible. Nice. And then, I'll go up to 100Ks. I'd like to try 100-miler either this year or next year. I think I'm probably better between the 50 and kind of 100K mark at the moment. That kind of tends to be where I perform a bit better. So, but yeah, I like anything. 5K, 10K, 100K.
Here's one. For the 100-miler, obviously that's kind of like a holy grail of ultra distance, that kind of race. Would you look at Western States or one of the famous 100-mile events?
Yeah, so this is a bit ridiculous, but I kind of want Western States to be the first 100-miler that I do. But it's just I've got to try and get into it, which is the hard bit.
For sure, but you wouldn't be the first one. I think it was Tom Evans' first 100-miler when he came third. So people have done it and done amazing. So I'm sure you'd do really well. Obviously, this year, 2021, it's very hard to say what kind of races are on the horizon. But I did see that you have you're going to jump on the Ultra X race up in Scotland, I believe. That's in May. Is that going to be your first race, or is there going to be something in before, or don't you know yet?
To be honest, I don't think there's going to be much going on before, just with lockdown and stuff. I think maybe the end of April we might be able to to squeeze something in. But I think from what old Boris said today, lockdown looks like it will be easing in March. So I think May is probably a sensible place to kind of aim for. And that gives me enough time to like have a couple of weeks off now and then start building. So I don't have to like rush into training, like unlike crazy Jim Walmsley, who's racing in 2 weeks again.
That man is on another level of craziness, definitely. But an ultimate athlete, even after getting attacked by the fence.
Yeah.
Bless him. Obviously, you mentioned earlier you ran the length of the UK. So was it Land's End, John O'Groats? You're the Jog world record holder. Is there any other kind of projects like that, maybe an FKT or something like that, that you're looking at in between races this year?
Yeah, so this year I want to attempt an FKT along the GR10, which is a route along the Pyrenees that goes from the Atlantic to the Med, mainly because I like the sound of having like a holiday in the Med at the end. I know I could just fly there.
Or do you run there?
So it's like this really beautiful like mountain run. So I want to try and do that in July, hopefully. It's about 800 kilometers. But I want to do that self-supported. So just with myself and my backpack.
Wow. That's a pretty impressive aim, self-supported of that kind of distance. But good luck in the endeavor for that, for sure.
The thing is, with that one is France is like so well set up with like these like refuges, like mountain huts, that they're every like 20K or so, and you can get like a 3-course meal, a bed and breakfast. So even though it is self-supported, it's like self-supported with a bed and nice food. So
so it's win-win.
Yeah, I don't have to sleep
in a warm
bush.
Bed, you don't have to sleep outside. Yes, exactly. That's always the win, definitely. Excellent. So that being one project, any other things on horizon project-wise for this year? Obviously in between races, we hope.
Yeah, I'm not sure about this year. Potentially one that I'm thinking about, but next year I want to go and try and run across America. So that will be a big thing that, I'm going to have to start planning now because there's quite a lot of logistics involved.
just a little bit. It's a fairly large country, but again, what amazing kind of achievement to aim for, some goals to do. That's good. So with the difference in distances that you kind of definitely looking for, obviously you're looking to run multi days, or you said you've done an 8K recently. Well, how does the training differ for yourself? Does it always different periodizations, or are you just training for a specific event, or are you just training consistently and then using that fitness that you're building?
So I'll always have like a main goal that I'm aiming for. So like in, and like periodize it. So like in this last block, like the Carbon X was like the main aim, and then I did all the little shorter races just as like really hard training runs to kind of see how everything was going and if my fitness was improving. I'll use those. Like I'm never going to be, well, I'm not like a very fast 5K runner like standalone, but I can like hold my own in like a local race. So I'll kind of use them as like hard training sessions to like, just build on fitness. But I'll always try and like go in cycles and like periodize my training throughout the year. Yeah. Otherwise you just end up getting knackered and burnt out.
Yes, end up KO. So alongside the running training that you're doing, obviously we mentioned about the strength and conditioning and the mobility and the stretching, would you say they're like key added sessions to the running, or do you cross train as well, do like some cycling, some other kind of weight lifting or other CrossFit style activities to help you?
On this block I just did, I mean, in the strength sessions, there is weights involved. It is quite quite lightweight but high reps. So I'll do that type of thing. I probably would cycle a bit more if it was in the summer that I was training, but I had no desire to go and cycle in the pouring rain or in winter. I did a little bit at the beginning when I was like getting back into running when it was warm and I could go and ride on the roads. But yeah, probably going into the summer, I'll probably cross train a little bit with cycling. But I'm a fair weather cyclist. I'm fine with that.
It's all good. So alongside that, obviously, we've said you've got yourself, you're on Strava, your account's open, people can see your stuff. Do you use data a lot to help your training, especially over those kind of distances? Does it help to see kind of when you're going a longer distance, the data? Do you use that a lot?
I use like the pace more and the distance. I don't really work with heart rate, so there's so many factors that affect heart rate. It probably would have worked quite well on the race on the weekend because it was dead flat and there wasn't really like any hills or things to kind of affect it. But yeah, generally I'll look at the pace that I'm doing runs at and the speed that I'm doing the sessions, and I will like every 6 weeks or so I'll have the same session so I can then like see the improvement in them. So yeah, that's the kind of thing I look at more than honing in on heart rate and that type of thing.
That's good. Well, if any of the listeners are on Strava, go and check out Carla Strava and you can just look at the stats from the Hoka project Carbon 2 thing. It's amazing. I was just scrolling through them like, oh dear, this is a long race, but it's pretty epic to see the stats, which is amazing. So obviously we've been chatting, Carla, about some races you've done, some kind of events you're looking to do, but let's take it back. Where did it start for you? How did you become a runner? How did you become an athlete?
I actually started running at school, just like the usual cross country, 800 meters, 1500 meters, go run round in a circle. Yep. And I did that, I guess I was probably like 14, 15 when I started running.
Yep.
And then joined the local running club. And then from there, I went to university and I actually took up triathlon at uni and then did triathlon for 10 years. And then got bored of it. And one day just went and did a running race and thought, oh, this is quite nice. I don't have to worry about jumping on my bike or finding my wetsuit and putting on my goggles. And so, yeah, from then that was at the Glasgow Half Marathon in, I think, 2013. And I pretty much stopped doing triathlon and just started running from there. And then a couple of years after, I did a couple of marathons and then started more like adventure running, I guess you'd call it, where I'd go and put on a backpack and go and run in the mountains or around an island or something for a couple of days. And that's the stuff I like the most, but I like to mix it up with some races in between, so you kind of get the best of both worlds.
Of course. So obviously, you did triathlon for such a long period of time. Do you think, obviously, you've drawn a lot of fitness from that and now you're using that for like the longer distance races? Do you think that's built a good standard for you?
Yeah,
I'm sure. Like general level of fitness?
Yeah, I'm sure. Like, you know, 10 years in any sport, I think, is going to probably build a nice foundation. And especially near the end, I was doing more like long distance Ironman type stuff. So you're breaking into that racing for 5, 6, 7 hour kind of territory, and I'm sure that kind of carries over into running.
Yeah, definitely. And obviously there's a lot about the 10,000 hour rule of consistency builds over time. I'm guessing you were doing a lot of running in with the triathlon stuff as well as swimming, biking, but now you can just put a bit more on just the running instead of having to divide up between the different disciplines, which is always probably time consuming as well as a lot of extra work.
Yeah. Yeah. It's nice just having to focus on one sport.
It probably makes a good bit of a difference, but that's good. When did you team up with Hoka? When did that happen?
So I actually approached them to help with Le Jog last year, and they said that yep, they would give me some shoes and my team some shoes, and they're like, let's see how you get on. And they were actually amazing through the whole thing. Like, they couldn't have like been more helpful, making sure that I had like the right kit for the race, for the run, getting me everything that I needed. And then after doing Le Jog, they then asked if I wanted to sign with them for this year. So that was pretty exciting, and a nice little bonus that came out of running the length of a country.
Wow, it's probably the least for the length of the country, but no, yeah. That's amazing. What a great sponsor to have, which is really good. The Le Jog, did you video it at all? Did you have any blog about it, or how did you document the journey?
Yeah, so we've actually made like a short little documentary. It's on YouTube called Every Step. So that's a little 30-minute kind of overview of what we did. And then during the whole run, my sister was pretty much in charge of social media. So she was kind of sharing the journey and stuff as we went along, which I think was quite nice because there wasn't much else going on last summer. We had a little tracker and stuff that everyone could follow, and yeah, it was cool because you ended up getting people coming and running with you and getting involved, which was awesome.
Yeah, it's always fun, especially as you're going that far distance. It's nice to see other people to run with, but no, amazing. It's cool. So obviously with now you're teamed up with Hoka, are you going to take part in any more of their events that they sponsor, or you've got any eye on like some of the bigger marathons that you're looking, or longer distance races to do later in the year?
I'm going to do, so you mentioned earlier, like the Ultra X events, and then potentially either Ultra Trail Snowdon, which is in June, and that's a Hoka sponsored event. And then they do another race in France called Grand Raid Tempeliers, which is another Hoka sponsored event. That's about 80K trail in October. So that'll be really cool. And then I'm trying to get a place at the CCC, which is part of the UTMB running thing. But it turned out that I was a bit of a moron and put my first name in the surname box and the surname in the first name box. So then I'd been wondering like for the past 2 weeks why I couldn't register and why my points weren't showing. And I think I was just trying to like, I took off a bit more than I could like handle in the weeks before the race. And I figured it out today. Yeah. So I'm trying to fix that to see if they'll let me race. But well, I may have missed the entry.
Hopefully they will let you race. I'm sure human error should not keep you from having a great race at the CCC.
I don't know, the French are quite strict, so if anyone's French that's listening and can help me out.
So you mentioned the Ultra X races. Are you going to be doing a few more of their races, their world championship race that they're doing?
Yeah, potentially going to Slovenia for the World Champs as well, which will be cool because that's 250K over the 5 days, which I think will really suit me. I can tend to like get out and run again each day. I haven't got any of their other ones on the cards. Maybe the Peak District in September. But yeah, they have some great races, and I think for people that are getting into ultra running, their format's quite nice because you can just do the 1 day. So you can just go and do the 50K on the first day. And then when you feel comfortable at that, you can then do the multi-day, which is 75 and 50. So it's a nice way for you to kind of like get your foot in the door with the race and see what it's like. Are you going to do any of them?
I've actually got a place at the World Championships. Oh, cool. So I've never done a multi-day before. The furthest I've done is a 50K. So that's why maybe you can give me some advice on a multi-day. Sure. So you're saying how nice it is to ease into the longer distances. But, so what multi-day racing, what's your best advice for that kind of stuff?
I think in your training, that's where you really need to practice like your back-to-back long runs. A lot of people tend to do that for like single day races. I don't really see the point because you're just going to run long for one day. But in the training, if you're doing like 3 days back-to-back, it's probably what I would do, training for a 5 day back-to-back race. You're going to get your legs used to that feeling of having to like drag yourself out of bed the next day and go running again when they're really sore. But yeah, the biggest thing I think with multi-day events is your fueling and just smashing the carbs like the whole time and making sure that your like glycogen levels, your carb levels are topped up to the max. Like during, like you're just going to have to eat all day and then all night when you're finished.
I'm a world champion eater, so that good.
You're fine.
My ears are loving that information. Yeah. I'll be fine with the eating. It'd be the dragging myself out of bed on the third day where I'm like, my legs.
Yeah, they always hurt. Like those first few like Ks are emotional. But, you know, as long as you've got it in your head before that it's going to hurt.
Yes.
But you're going to be all right. You're not going to die. And it will get easier throughout the day, then you'll be fine.
You'll make it, it'll be fine. Yeah. I'm keeping an eye on the obviously the situation around the world. Hopefully that event will happen.
Yeah.
So but yeah, got a place there. So I'm gonna have to up it in multi-day long distance runs. Okay, let's get that done. Oy, oy, oy. It's gonna be interesting. But so from yourself, what kind of thing would you give advice wise to somebody who's going to step up to say a 50k for the ultra running? Obviously, let's say like a 1 day 50k race, would it be doing a bit of strength and conditioning as well to make sure your legs are going to be strong enough to make it across that distance? Would it be a good amount of yoga and mobility to make sure that they're not going to like pull a muscle, injure themselves? What would be the best bits of advice you'd give to somebody going for a longer distance race?
Yeah, 100% putting in that strength and conditioning and mobility yoga sessions. Like I think you're better off dropping, if you haven't got enough time, you're better off binning an easy run and getting those sessions in, because that's what's going to help prevent any niggles coming on further down the line, and they're going to make you stronger. So always put those sessions in a week. And if you need to drop a session, drop an easy run and keep those in. And then just building up your distance progressively and giving yourself enough time. I think a common thing that a lot of people do is they'll give themselves like 8 weeks and they'll be like, yeah, I've got a 50K in 8 weeks. That's enough time to train. And you're like, well,
no,
It's not going to be fun. It's going to be painful when you're not going to enjoy it. So, you know, a good, I think, 4 months is a nice amount of time to like build into something like that to set yourself up for success. Like you can do it quickly, but then it's just not going to be an enjoyable experience and you won't want to do it again. But with a nice progressive build up where you can have rest weeks in there that you don't have to kick the arse out of it in the beginning, will just make it a lot more fun.
Yeah, a more enjoyable process for people to take in. How about for yourself? How is your training? Do you train a lot alone? Are you training with a club, coach? What's your training base like?
So I coach myself. So I've only got myself to blame for the 5K sessions of death that I give myself. I do most of my training alone, but like those hard, like 4x5K sessions I was telling you about. I actually had a couple of friends who are from my running club in London, Clapham Chasers, and they came and helped me pace those sessions, which was amazing because I think I ran a lot faster with them than I would have on my own. Mm-hmm. And then I had a couple of friends that I did like long runs and stuff with. But yeah, it was a little bit difficult this year. There wasn't like that much time to be able to train with other people, but I'm always like, if I could do all my sessions with other people, then I would, just because you run better. But yeah, just getting that one in a week was pretty good to have someone to push me a little bit harder than I would have done on my own.
No, that's definitely helpful to have somebody there. And if not, good music is always a must.
Yeah.
those kind of sessions. So obviously with this kind of training, you say you're training on your own a lot, longer distance races like the 100K event you just did, there's obviously a huge mental factor to these kind of things. What kind of mental state do you kind of go into when you're pushing yourself across those 100Ks or when you're training in the dark on your own?
I think the biggest thing like that I find is that you've got to accept that during the race there's going to be hard bits and it's going to be painful at times and you're going to want to walk, but you will get to the end and it's like that feeling of crossing the finish line is like amazing. So, you know, on Saturday when I was racing, like my quad started to hurt 40K and it was rubbish and it slowed me down. But, you know, you're running far and your body's going to hurt. And for me, it's just accepting that pain. It's like embracing it. You're like, okay, it's going to hurt. Let's just roll with it now and get to the end in one piece. And I think if you're realistic with yourself and you tell your, you know, it's okay that it hurts. And if you want to walk through an aid station, that's fine. Like it, you know, it doesn't matter. It's like part of the process. But I do think it is really important that if you can finish a race that you do, like you don't always have it your way. It's not always easy. It's not always fun. But then when you have a race that's easy and fun, it, you know, it puts it all in perspective and, yeah, it makes you feel like those hard races were kind of worth it. Because then, you know, maybe 1 out of 10 is amazing. But then it is amazing when you get that, like, awesome race.
That's it. The feeling is like no other, which is definitely good. But, yes, those hard sessions and races where you're not feeling it are not great. But persevere, people, persevere. Yeah. It will come good at some point. So over the course of your running, triathlon careers, what is the your favourite event? These are always the hardest questions.
Yeah, I know. Comrades is like a pretty awesome event. So that's like the oldest and largest ultramarathon in the world. You get, it's 90K-ish and you get about 20,000 people lining up at the start line.
Looks like an epic race. Did you, how many versions have you done?
I've done it 4 times, 2 up and 2 down.
I was going to say, was it an up or a down?
Yeah, a bit of both. And I think if anyone is an ultra runner, like you need to put that race on your bucket list because it's just insane. Like most ultra races that you do over in the UK, you get like 200 people rocking up. Like to get 20,000 is just, and like crowds lining the whole way, it's mental. So I think it's brutal, but yeah, it's awesome.
Nice. What is your favorite location to race?
Oh, I don't know. I actually really liked being out in America this last week and I'd like to do more races out there just from seeing the terrain and like what Americans are like. They just love everything. So I think it would be really fun to, you know, like they're like, you're looking great. And I'm like, no, I'm not. I look like a wounded buffalo, but thank you. so like, I think their enthusiasm is
their positivity knows no bounds. Exactly. But we love them for that, mate.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Brits have a different level of love for stuff. But what's your go-to food for like longer distance races then? Is it gels? Is it something hot? Or what's the go-to food?
It depends what I'm doing. So like on the weekend, because I was trying to run pretty fast, I was doing it all off carb drinks and gels. So I used the OTE Supercarb and the Morton gels and Noon Hydration just because I was going, well, in the beginning, I was going too fast to like chew food and I find it quite difficult to digest it. But if I'm doing slower, longer races where I'm going probably like a minute a K slower than I was, I'll try and stick more to real food. So peanut butter sandwich, bananas, nuts and dried fruit. I find it kind of, it's just nicer to eat than like drinking sugar all day, but the sugar works when you have to take it.
For sure. I'm sure for a small period of time, the sugary drinks taste nice, and then you hit like a barrier and it's like, oh, I cannot take it anymore.
Yeah. It's
fun, but you got to do it for a course or for a race. So that's the way. Quickly about nutrition. Would you suggest to, obviously, people when they're aiming for longer races to add that into their training races to make sure that they're taking nutrition in the right way?
Yeah, 100%. Like anyone I coach, if they do a run longer than 90 minutes, then they start practicing race nutrition for whatever race that they're doing. And we start it early because your body kind of needs to learn how to eat and run and digest that food. And also you need to figure out like what you like, what you don't like, if it's settled in your stomach. And the longer you can practice it, the better. And I find if you're starting off practicing on those shorter 90 minutes, but like shorter runs, you've got a much longer time to like test and adjust and practice your eating strategy. So yeah, like you have to do it in training, otherwise you'll just end up in a world of pain on race day.
Yes, definitely. And for listeners, don't add something brand new in race day, because you've trained it for a reason. Don't go and change it up. Brilliant. So what kind of go-to kit do you take with you on, say, like the CCC race? Would you take poles? Would you take like a hydration vest, obviously, for something over that kind of distance? What's the go-to kit for those longer distance trail kind of races?
Yeah, so hydration vest, definitely. And I really like the ones with the water bottles on the front of your chest, because they're a lot easier to refuel. So if you come into an aid station and they're empty, it's a lot easier to pull them out and fill them back up than trying to get a bladder out the back of a pack and put all your kit back in. It's actually a bit of a nightmare. Hydration vest, 100% on any like ultra race, unless there's aid stations all the way. So on the weekend, we didn't need them because there was aid stations every, I think, 4K. But otherwise, yep. And you normally have to carry mandatory kit as well. So you need somewhere to put it. And then also training with that vest as well. So my one, I've actually ended up having it like tailored and like sewn, so it actually fits properly on my body. Because obviously they're designed to be like a pretty generic fit. So I definitely think it's worth doing a bit of sewing and getting it to fit your body properly. And then poles, depending on what the race is. Like if it's a really runnable route, then I wouldn't take poles, but something like the CCC, poles will probably be pretty beneficial because the climbs are quite savage. So if you can, if you can have a bit of a benefit going up those hills and even taking a bit of pressure on the downhills on your legs, poles are going to be useful. But if it's a flattish ultra, they're just going to be get in the way. So you kind of have to look at the terrain and the distance and see if you need them or not. And then again, you need to practice with your poles, because if you can't use poles, it's not that great. But actually, there's loads of good YouTube videos on how to like use poles properly.
There we go. Check out in the YouTube.
Perfect.
Carla, where can the listeners connect with you? Is it Instagram, YouTube? Where's the best place to follow your journey, your adventures?
Yeah, probably Instagram. I post most of the stuff to that. I like it because I like pictures of what everyone's doing. So it's just Carla Molinaro on there. And then, Strava, I put all my training up on Strava so you can see what I do. And then, Facebook as well.
Cool. Brilliant. Wow. Carla, it has been amazing to chat to you this evening. Amazing achievement to taking part in the Hoka Project Carbon event. Well done for going for it from the beginning. Next time, Project Carbon 3, it's going to happen. Thanks a lot, and have a great 2021 season. And we hope to see you winning some races and setting some records throughout the year.
Awesome. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
No worries. Thanks for your time.